more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, we heard about a historical novel set in 19th century Iceland. But now we're going to take a trip further back in time and further across the Atlantic to 17th century Spain. It was a time of upheaval and uncertainty for a formerly powerful Spanish empire. But while the kingdom was in decline, a young court painter was making his ascension. Diego Velázquez would become one of the most renowned painters of the Baroque period, and his rise to prominence is captured in Barbara Mujica's latest novel, I Am Venus. The title refers to one of art history's most enduring mysteries. Who exactly is the woman who depicted the Roman beauty in Velázquez's only nude painting? Mujica, a professor of Spanish at Georgetown University, imagines a story of love, politics, and art to answer this question. But first, she tells Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce more about just who Velázquez was.
Well, Velázquez was the court painter, but he didn't start out that way. He started out as an apprentice for a man named Pacheco, who had an art school in Seville, and he was the most influential theorist, art theorist of the time. And Velázquez was a very ambitious man. He married Pacheco's daughter, and he eventually, after a couple of tries, wound up being the court painter for Philip VI.
Explain why he was such a significant painter in not just Spanish art history, right, but in art history in general.
He brought a lot of creativity and experimentation to painting, because in the time when Pacheco was the main authority on painting, painters did what they called narrative painting. They did Bible stories and mythological stories, but the painting was supposed to tell a story. But what Diego Velázquez began to do was a different kind of painting. He did a lot of portraits. Once he was at court, he had to do a lot of portraits. He used live models, which was something that was not considered acceptable by everyone in the art world. He used a very limited palette. And one of the most important things about Velázquez is that he is really the epitome of the Baroque painter. And one of the characteristics of Baroque painting is, of course, ornamentation. But in Spain, the Baroque is also associated with a sense of pessimism, a sense of illusion, the notion that Spain at this time is in a state of decline, and that all of this ornamentation and all of this very, very abundant decoration is hiding something. And what it's hiding is rot. Or nothing, nothingness. Don't forget, at this time, the Inquisition is in full force, and the Inquisition condemns nude painting, and the moralists are out there in the pulpits condemning the decay of Spanish morals. But what we see is this interest in nude painting on the part of the king and the nobleman. And more than that, I think more than nudity, what really is interesting here is the pure hypocrisy. The king and all of his men and all of his priests are talking about the evils of the flesh. And at the same time, Philip IV certainly had one mistress after the other, one lover after the other, and he reputedly slept with anybody he could find, including the house cat, the nun on the corner, or the whoever he could get his hands on, literally. The other thing is that Spain is in a state of bankruptcy. Spain is spending and spending and spending and spending. None of the court painters is getting paid except for Velázquez, who's the favorite. But while Spain is in bankruptcy, the government, the king, is spending loads of money.
At the heart of this story is this one painting that Velázquez has done, The Toilet of Venus. There's this enduring mystery about who is the woman Velázquez painted. Why did you choose this particular mystery of art history to fictionalize?
Well, for me, first of all, writing about Velázquez was a natural because I teach 17th century Spain. And this painting is a natural because it's such an enigmatic painting. We actually don't know who the woman is. And there has been so much speculation. But we also have this idea of reality and illusion. What's actually happening in this painting? Look at the mirror. What you see in the mirror is not what is. And if you look at other of Velázquez's paintings, like, for example, Las Meninas, we have perhaps a clearer example of how he uses illusion. In Las Meninas, you have the little girls, the little princesses up front. You have Velázquez on the side painting. You have the image of the king and queen on a far wall, and the image of a man either coming in to the room or leaving it. And we don't know what's happening. We don't know where the king and queen are, if they're behind us, and that's a reflection. We don't know where Velázquez is, if he's behind us painting this image, but this is a reflection. We don't know if there's a mirror of a mirror, if what we're seeing is the reflection of a reflection. We don't know if the man is coming in to the room or leaving it. Well, in the Venus painting, we also don't know what's happening. It's more complex and more subtle, but a lot of this is explained in the book. Of course, the other thing that attracted my attention was the opportunity this book gave me to talk about society and court society. The fact that you have this one extant nude of Velázquez, who paints it at a time when painting nudes is absolutely forbidden by the Inquisition.
Absolutely. And that's one of the most interesting parts of the book is how he's getting away with it.
Right. So the point is, how is he getting away with doing what's absolutely forbidden? He's certainly the court favorite. So the fact that he reached this high status at court and he dared to do this, the painting was kept hidden for years. When it was discovered, nobody knew anything about this painting. People were speculating about when he did it, whether the model was Italian, because he spent two stints in Italy. Did he paint her in Italy? We know that he didn't. But people at the time thought that maybe he did. There was a penalty not only for the artist, but also for the model. So who would take the risk to paint for a painting like this? And what would be the impact on Velázquez and his family and his reputation and his standing in court society, which was very critical of this kind of paintings at the same time that they were all commissioning these kinds of paintings. So what exactly is going on? It's such an enigmatic issue that it was just perfect material for a novelist.
And I'm sure you were able to find much of that out in doing the research behind the book. But what I love is, as a novelist, you were able to give so many of these women who in most cases left little to no trace of themselves in historical documents, you were able to give them voice.
That was an important part of what I was trying to do. One of the things that I teach at Georgetown is a course on early modern women. And I have done a lot of work on women's letters. And I've read, we don't have huge numbers of women writers, but there are women writers. And I've done a lot of work in convents. And nuns are the women who were very literate. And they wrote a lot of letters. And they visited women outside of the convent. So there are lots of descriptions of daily life, what they ate, what they valued, what kind of remedies they used when they were ill. There's a birthing scene, for example, in the book, and how the practice of midwifery was changing, for example, at this time. The Arab influence in Spain, even though the Moriscos, the Christianized Moors, were expelled in 1609, there continued to be Arabic influence. There is even today in southern Spain. And so all of these things they're interesting and they're important to make this period come alive. I think it's important to know these things.
How did the changing Spain that we see in your book impact Velázquez as we watch his career unfold?
What we know about Velázquez was that he was ambitious and that he wanted to be a good painter, but ultimately being a painter was not the highest achievement that he wished to attain. He really wanted to be a courtier. He wanted to be an advisor of the king. He wanted to be a knight of Santiago. And when he had the chance to become a knight, and they did the investigation of his life, he was not approved because what they determined was that he wasn't an old Christian, that he had Jewish blood. And there was this tremendous, it was considered a stain on his background. And the king had to intervene so that he could be approved for this honor. So I think it's very hard for us to understand because we think of Velázquez as this wonderful painter, and we would think that when you're given a gift like this, what you would want the most would be to perfect it. And he did, but he wanted something else. So I think that says something about the times also, what was valued.
What do we take today from this 17th century story of Velázquez, of his family, and this enduring fascination with this particular Venus, of all the Venuses out there that have been painted?
Well, I certainly took and share with my students certainly a sense of a cautionary tale. Spain was arguably the most powerful nation on earth. It had the largest navy. It had the largest flotilla. It had claimed most of the New World. When Charles V became emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, it was said that the sun never set on his empire. That was at the beginning of the 16th century. By the 17th century, Spain is in utter ruin. Another aspect of this book is that it takes place during the 30 Years' War. And there are a lot of veterans that are coming back from the 30 Years' War. And the crown isn't financially able to pay them the stipends that they were promised. And the noblemen who had, in centuries past, taken responsibility for certain regiments, noblemen had their own regiments, and then they kept them, their soldiers, well-dressed and well-fed, they weren't doing that anymore, in many cases, by the 17th century. At Georgetown, I work with veterans. I'm the faculty advisor of the Student Veterans Association, and I hear a lot of stories about veterans who come back and they can't find jobs, and they can't – and then dealing with the VA, and then eventually they do usually get the stipends that they were promised, but it's a struggle. And a lot of them are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And although the name is different, soldiers have always suffered from this kind of thing. So what I see are a lot of parallels between early modern Spain, what's going on now. Certainly, if you read the newspapers, we see all of these family values politicians falling one after the other. And I think on both sides of the aisle, we have a very, very good examples of that. And what I take from this, my studies of this period, is a sense of awareness and a feeling that we have to be cautious about where we're going and our values and what we're getting into and think about the consequences when we make political decisions. So that's certainly one of the things. And, of course, the notion that, you know, a lot of what we see and a lot of what we think, there's another way to see it. And a lot of what we think is an illusion. I think that that's a message for all time. So we have to be cautious about what we think is absolutely true, because when we see things from another perspective, things might look different.
Well, Barbara Mujica, thank you so much for telling us about I Am Venus.
Thank you for having me.
Award-winning author Barbara Mujica's latest book is I Am Venus. Her previous books include the bestseller Frida and Sister Teresa. Her essays have appeared in dozens of national publications. She's also a professor at Georgetown University and a specialist in early modern Spanish literature. And she spoke with Stephanie Lecce. That's all for today's edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. So great to have you listening today, as it always is. And I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.